you doing? I'm Karen Hart Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's February already in 2017, and what a year it has been so far. I like to always look at the positive things that come out of every event that occurs, and it's taking a lot more creativity to find the positive things that are coming out of things that are happening going on here in the United States. But one of the good things is that I'm finding more and more people are getting active and talking out, speaking out, saying what they feel, and letting our officials know what they feel about how we should run our country. And from what I'm hearing, for the most part, we are in agreement about many, many things, about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I'm hoping that this keeps up and maybe gets stronger. I've been an activist most of my life, so this isn't new for me, but I've always had the feeling that if we have a roof over our heads and we have enough food to eat, then we have really all that we need, and we can be of service and help others. Now, I want to take a deep breath. Will you breathe with me? Because I like it when we all do this together. It feels very empowering and relaxing. Thank you for being here and for tuning in, love. I want to bring on my guest. I'm so grateful for her because she appeared just in the nick of time. So I will be speaking in a moment with Marina Yanay Triner, and she is a vegan blogger, educator, and recipe creator. She has a website, Soul in the Raw. She promotes a high-raw vegan lifestyle, and her goal is to show people how easy raw veganism can be and how fun and creative it is to add more raw foods to their lifestyle. She began her vegan journey as a result of a powerful healing story in her family, which I hope we hear a little bit more about in a moment, and discovered her own body and a new connection to herself in the process. She was also able to heal her digestion. Marina's brand new online course will be coming out this March. It will teach you how to improve your digestion through oil-free, high-raw vegan meals, and you can grab her three vegan sauce recipes from the course right at our website, Responsible Eating and Living, where we're advertising this show, or you can go directly to soulintheraw.com. Marina, welcome.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here, and I love that breath that we started with. That was amazing.
You love what? Oh, the
The
breath.
breath that we all took together. Yeah, that was, I actually even wanted to talk about breathing, so that was perfect.
Oh, good. Let's jump in and talk about breathing. It's one of my favorite subjects. I like to say that there are some essential things that we need to do in life, and the first thing is breathing. My partner Gary likes to say that he breathes for a living. But I'm bumped.
Yeah, it's so basic, but we all forget it, right?
Yeah, especially when we're tense or stressed, we hold that breath. We hold it in, and that's not a good practice.
Yeah,
So tell me, what do
totally.
you think about breathing?
I actually wanted to talk about breathing when it comes to digestion because I feel like we always focus on food, which is totally important. Of course, I think food is important, but the relaxation around food is also really critical. So, one of the things I like to tell my audience is that before their meals, they should take five deep breaths. And for people like me who love food so much and eat so many times a day, it's perfect because then we are pretty much relaxed all day. But being relaxed around your meals is even more important than in general, because then you digest way better.
Absolutely. I know many people, and I've fallen for this recently because my schedule is very complicated right now. When I sit down for a meal and I'm so hungry, I just want to inhale it all right away. And taking those few breaths is so important to just relax and slow down.
Yeah, and just be more mindful also about what you're eating and where it comes from and how it makes you feel, and to eat slower. That's a big challenge for me. I know that, and I know it is for a lot of people, and then it makes their digestion problematic because we start digesting in the mouth.
Absolutely. Well, this may not be in the order you wanted to discuss these things, but I kind of like to go with the flow, and we're doing the breathing flow right now. Digestion in the mouth. I can't stress that enough. Can you embellish that a little bit?
Yeah, so we start, I think carbs are the most important in terms of those enzymes in our saliva that break them down. So we got to chew really well, and that's where a lot of people fail. You know, they just gulp down their food. So if we start by chewing really well and taking small bites, that's really going to help.
It's hard for people, too. You know, some people just like to use shovels almost.
Yeah.
Shovel sizes.
Totally. I relate because I love food so much and I love making delicious food. And also having, you know, your electronics off, like your computer and your phone and the TV and everything is really, really helpful also for your digestion, because then you can focus on the food and you can stop eating when you're full. It's a lot easier that way.
I like talking about this, and I talk about it periodically. I think it's important to bring it up regularly because we forget. We all forget, and I need these reminders, so I think everyone else does too. I like to tell people, especially when they're having smoothies, to chew them.
Oh, yeah, that's such a great point because we think it's a drink, but it's actually food.
Yeah. We need to let it digest a little in the mouth. And the nice thing about slowing down, breathing before you get started, thinking about how grateful you are for what you are about to eat, and then taking small bites, it lasts so much longer. The enjoyment lasts longer.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
You know, I'm not a religious person. How many times have I said this on this program? But I do see value in the ritual of saying grace before eating. And we don't do it all the time. Occasionally we get into a routine of doing that. But I see healthful benefits of doing something like that.
And it's in so many religions where we say, you know, I think it's grace, or in Judaism too, you actually bless every single thing you eat. And yeah, I think it's beautiful. There's a lot of wisdom in there that just makes you also like live in the moment and focus on the moment.
Not just what you eat, but how it got to your plate. There are so many people involved with everything that we eat. It's mind-boggling today.
Yeah, and we have it so easy.
We do have it easy. Yep.
Yeah.
It always surprises me how people think it's difficult to prepare food in the kitchen. And just think, for most of us, you didn't have to seed it or grow it and prepare the soil and harvest it and weed it and all that stuff before it came into your kitchen.
To me, it's honestly a miracle because, to be honest, I'm great with making food, but growing food has been so challenging so far. So it's something that I definitely want to learn, but I have a little garden and it's been really a big challenge. So to me, it's like almost a miracle what those farmers do. Pretty amazing.
It is. There are some online courses and websites that I don't have them off the top of my head, but if you're interested, I can send them to you and anyone who's interested. But there are some really good ones where people are sharing their insight about gardening, especially in different environments, because it's not the same everywhere. But they are really
right.
I mean, this is like, you don't want to reinvent the wheel. People have figured this out already. And it's
John
not hard.
John Kohler is awesome for that. Growing your greens.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, let's back up a little bit and tell us your story, your vegan journey.
Yeah. My vegan journey. So I've been vegetarian since I was 20, and I'm almost 29, so it's pretty crazy how long it's been since I've had meat. Or I started as pescatarian, actually. And I sort of did it for the animals and also in a way for religious reasons, weirdly enough. I'm not very religious, but I was working a lot with Holocaust survivors and, you know, just learning a lot about the Holocaust at the time. And I sort of wanted to honor their memory in a way and to keep kosher. And then I was thinking, you know, it's so much easier to keep kosher when I just don't eat meat and I don't like it and I don't want to kill animals anyway. So that's sort of how it started, kind of a strange story. Mm-hmm. And I did not think about health at all back then. And then my mom healed herself. So I mentioned that to you. And my mom had this chronic disease called interstitial cystitis. And if anyone here of your listeners is struggling with this, I would love for them to watch the video that I did with her on YouTube of how she healed it, because she just explained it in great detail. And it's such a powerful story, because she was sick for 8 years, and this disease is horrible. It feels like needles in your bladder, and she had very severe pain. Have you ever heard of interstitial cystitis?
I have, actually, yes.
Yeah, it's kind of in the Crohn's, you know, that kind of family. And so she was really suffering, and I honestly lost my mom for those 8 years. She couldn't talk to me. It was really awful, and I was actually living in Jerusalem, and every time I would come home and visit her, she could not speak to me at all. She couldn't carry on a conversation. So that really encouraged her to do something about it, because everything that the doctors were offering really wasn't helping. It would help for a moment, but it wasn't a solution for her. So she started researching and looking around for what other people did to heal in general, and she found water fasting and raw food. And if you would have told me 5 years ago that I would eat raw, I would say you're crazy and there's no way. But just seeing her example was so powerful. And that's why I always tell people to have that intention in mind, what is driving them, because the example of my mom, even from not being able to stand up straight because she was in so much pain, she just couldn't even stand up, she couldn't leave the house, to hiking and living a life, just having a normal life, is such a big inspiration to me. So that's how she motivated me to also start my own health journey.
Wow, that's a great story. I haven't shared any interstitial cystitis stories on this program, so this is the first. And don't try and say that three times fast.
I always used to say I always used to say it wrong, and my mom would correct me until I had to say it so many times at the classes that I would teach that I got it down.
Good. Well, that's a great story and a great message to everyone, that mm-hmm. we are responsible for our own health and healing.
Yeah, exactly.
And the medical community, a lot of them do wonderful things, and we can't live without them, literally.
Yeah.
But we do have to realize that it really is up to us. We can't just put our lives in someone else's hands.
Yeah, I so agree with you. I really value the work that doctors do, and I think a lot of those tools are incredible and necessary, but at the same time, we need to know when to use our instincts and listen to our body and our needs, because no one could help her but her. And that was amazing to me, because I personally in my life never felt control over my body. I never connected that I could do something to, you know, to heal myself or to feel connection to myself. And I actually have a past of trauma. I'm a sexual assault survivor. And so that was a big lesson, that I can have control over my fate and how I heal and how I feel on the inside. So that was really, really cool.
Very cool. And I can't stress enough, if you're going through something, however simple or complicated, dangerous, or just chronic it may be, if a doctor or medical professional says that they can only do so much, they can't heal you or cure you, you need to find other help.
Mm-hmm.
And go with your gut. I think our guts have a lot of intelligence.
They
And there's more to that expression than we really understand.
It's actually scientific. It's not even, you know, some woo-woo thing. It's totally scientific of how really smart they are and how much they control our immune system, our mood, our brain, everything.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, my mom would have never... She almost lost hope, you know. She was feeling so hopeless when she would go to the doctor and they would give her injections of these really powerful drugs. And for half an hour, the pain stopped and she was so elated and so excited. And then she was hugging the doctor and everything. And then half an hour later, it was the same thing. And she would read about 18-year-old girls who were having their bladder removed because of this disease. And then the disease got another spot, so it would go to, you know, their colon or another area of their body, and it was really horrible to think that she would be in this much pain for the rest of her life. So I'm so grateful that she was able to push through water fasting for 28 days on water.
Yeah, let's talk about water fasting. I did a water fast for 3 weeks about 15 years ago, just for the fun of it.
So much fun.
And I actually did enjoy it. But how did she discover water fasting and what was her experience like?
She was just reading online, and she actually, when we lived in Israel when I was little, we had a cleaning lady that kind of became part of our family, and she told us a lot about natural hygiene, that whole school of thought. And my parents actually started eating that way for a while. It wasn't vegan at all, but they were feeling better than they did when they would have processed food. So just that whole idea of healing naturally was something that my mom already kind of was in the back of her mind, so it wasn't new to her. And she was reading people's healing stories and reading about water fasting, and I guess she connected the dots and kind of realized, okay, if I let my body rest, you know, my digestion rest, because the digestion takes 70% or more of our energy, then my body can heal itself. And honestly, I don't know how she did it while being in pain and thinking of all of this and deciding it, but we all supported her. My dad and I supported her, so that must have helped
right.
her too.
I'm wondering, did the pain get easier as the fast continued? Do you remember?
Yeah, well, she told me many times, but also in detail when I interviewed her. So yeah, it's actually a 3-part interview for anyone who wants to watch. She talks about the whole thing, what she ate before and after, and what she eats now. Mm. But basically, in the beginning, it was really bad. She said it felt like, honestly, like needles in her butter. It was terrible for a few days. And then it gradually subsided. And so that really kind of gave her motivation to keep going.
Well, she's a very brave, courageous person. And
she
I'm glad
is.
That she was rewarded from her efforts.
Me too. And impacted me and the whole family and so many other people. So, yeah.
I had a relatively easy fast because I went into it as a pretty clean vegan at the time. And
mm-hmm.
it was just getting over that hunger, which took about 2.5 days to finally not feel hungry. But there were other people at the fasting house that really had a lot of problems, and the fast was difficult because as you're going through it, you're doing some serious detoxing, and your body is letting all the toxic stuff leave
mm-hmm.
the body, and that can hurt.
It's funny you say 2.5 days. She said 3 days, and I felt no hunger. So the hunger wasn't the problem. It was her specific organ detoxing, but it's exactly as you say, it depends on what people ate before. So if their body is pretty clean, it shouldn't be so difficult. But if it's, you know, if they're eating processed junk food before, then it can be pretty hard.
Were you born in Israel?
I was born in Ukraine, and then I moved to Israel when I was 2 until I was 12, and then I moved back to the United States, and then back to Israel, and then back to the United States. So it's been back and forth.
So were you born in 1988?
Yes, the year
yeah,
you
so
went vegan.
Yeah, how did you know that I went vegan in 1988? Or you heard that somewhere, I guess.
I read it on your website, I think, is where I saw it.
And do you know where I went, Megan?
No.
There you go. So that's why I asked where you were born. I was working for an Israeli company, and I was in Israel for 3 months. And
oh, wow.
I was just getting ready to be vegan. I was going through, like, how can I give up this and that cheese and butter and whatever, mm-hmm. and I wanted to do it. And I thought, while I'm traveling and I'm on my own a lot, that's when I'm going to do it. So I went vegan in Israel in 1988, the year you were born.
That's crazy. Wow.
And it was easy because there were so many wonderful salads. There's always hummus.
Yeah, Israel is an easy place to be vegan, and now even more so.
Yeah, well, because they know what's in the food.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot, yeah. I mean, you won't find an Israeli dinner, you know, where there's not salads. Or, there's always vegan options. It's really, really easy.
Yep. Well, so, there you have it. And it's kind of fun to talk to somebody who was born in the year that I went vegan, because I was, in a way, born again.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's an amazing thing. That's very cool.
So you've taken all this wonderful knowledge and you've put it together and you have Soul in the Raw. Tell us what goes on there.
So Soul in the Raw originally started as a hobby that I would just post recipes because everybody was asking, especially my mother-in-law, who's now pretty much vegan, I think. Maybe she has eggs every once in a while, but my dad and mom-in-law and my partner's twin brother are all almost entirely vegan, so I'm very proud of that. And they always say that it's thanks to me because I was very patient and nice and, you know, would just bring them delicious food. And so we were originally 100% raw for a while. And I was making a lot of recipes, so I started putting it on there. And then it turned into my life's mission because I loved it so much. And I think food is also the way to heal everything, you know, not just physically, but emotionally too. So now it's a community online. My Facebook group is called Raw Souls, and it's pretty active. And I like to teach people how to better their digestion like I was able to do and how to include more raw food, not 100% raw, but just a whole food plant-based diet that has a lot of raw food in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at some of your recipes right now. They look pretty good.
Yeah, they're yummy. They're really delicious.
So you have, you're advertising these three oil-free vegetables. Salad dressings. And mm-hmm. I remember, I think it was around 2004, 2005, I did an all raw diet for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it, but I was kind of learning about the raw food movement. And I think many people were at the time, and it's definitely evolved over time. But I was not doing it how I would do it today. So when I would go to raw restaurants, the food was smothered in olive oil, loaded with nuts, mm-hmm. topped with namish oil. It was salty, oily, and fatty, and that didn't feel very good.
Yeah. It's so funny because people think that anything that says raw is healthy, and so did I in the beginning, but I learned so much since then about what is actually research-proven to be healthy and listening to Dr. Greger a lot, you know, and really learning what is healthy food. And, of course, that's fruits and vegetables and roots and starches and things like that. But the cool thing about raw food is all the flavor and the sauces that I love to make so much. And there are ways to make them healthy and with less oil and less nuts. So that's kind of my passion.
I'm laughing here. I'm looking at some of your wraps that you call, I don't even know how to pronounce it, W-R-A-W-P-S.
Wraps. That's actually a brand, and they make raw wraps that are really good and oil-free, and I love to use them.
Okay, what are some of the favorite recipes?
So I actually wanted to teach your audience the way that I make my sauces, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go.
So The most important thing is I avoid oil, and if you want to, we can talk about some of the reasons why, especially for digestion.
Yes, please.
And I know a lot of people struggle. Okay, so should we start with that, talking about why to avoid oil in general?
Yeah, a lot of people get they get these expressions beyond surprise. What? No oil?
I know what you mean. I get those all the time. But olive oil is healthy, but coconut oil, like, no.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm actually having a lot of fun talking about that with people because I love teaching new information, and I remember when it was new to me. And it makes so much sense. I actually even watched yesterday how olive oil is made. And if you watch that, or canola oil, which is definitely horrible to watch because there's so many chemicals in the process.
Well, but I have to clarify even, they're not organic canola oil because organic canola oil is not made the same way.
Right. I was watching the conventional.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, but even if you watch the oils that are made in a better way, you know, the production that is a little bit less processed or refined, you still watch all of that fiber and just the whole kind of olive going to waste and just eating, you know, having the fat pressed out of it. So it's 100% fat. And all of the fiber is gone. And we know that fiber is not just the fiber. It's also all of the nutrients that come with it that they throw away. And I really like to tell people to look at the nutrition facts on the bottle because you can see it says fat, carbs, and protein, 0 for 2 and, you know, 100% for the fat, which is there's no whole food or real food in this world. Even fruits and vegetables have all three. So that's kind of how you know that it's processed and that you're not getting everything you could be. And it's a lot of calories, too. But the reason that it impacts digestion is really interesting because we, especially as vegans, we have to have enough omega-3s. And most people eat really omega-6 rich oils like olive oil or coconut oil or avocado, all of them except for flax, hemp, and chia and walnut oils, which I think most people don't really emphasize. And so that really increases inflammation and it causes weight gain and bloating and things like that. And then it also is, you know, cause for sluggish digestion because when you're having something that's 100% fat, it's harder to digest. And then, of course, it's been linked to heart disease in the research because it impacts our arteries. And so I think that's a really powerful reason to stop eating oil. And when I did, I felt a huge, huge difference in my digestion.
Very good. All right, so let's hear about some of your sauces.
Yes. So everybody can go ahead and download those three that are my favorites. Actually, they were picked in the Facebook group because in the course there are 52, so I just picked three that were pretty great. But all of them are very, very easy to make, and they taste great. And I want to tell you the 7 steps. So I'm a really big systems girl. I like systems. And I thought of 7 steps that you think of when you're about to make a dressing or a sauce or a dip. And the only way that those three are different is just the water content. But other than that, these are the steps. So the first one is your vegetables. So you can use tomatoes or cucumber or zucchini, whatever fresh vegetables as a base. And I use that to have less fat in the recipe. So tomatoes are some of my favorites. And then if you don't know what to use, always go for zucchini because it's pretty much flavorless. And you can also steam them. So you can put raw vegetables or you can steam them, whatever you like. And so that's our base, and that's the first step. And then the second step is the fat. So those are the nuts and seeds. And if you really want to go low fat, you can use beans in there. And the third, fourth, and fifth is salt, sour, and sweet. So I'm doing this really fast, and in the course I explain each one really, really well. So we have the base of vegetables, the fat, salt, sour, and sweet. So for the fat, as we said, it's nuts and seeds or beans. And for the salt, you can just use salt or tamari or soy sauce, you know, anything that is salty. for the sour, any type of citrus or lemon juice or orange juice. And for the sweet, any sweetener that you like, or dates are always the best option because they're the most natural. And then the last two steps are thickener and flavoring. And the thickener is chia seeds and flax seeds, and that's how I balance the omega-3 I added in there. And then you probably know that the flax seeds and the chia seeds really swell up. They take in a lot of liquid, so they thicken your dressing, and then it sticks really well to your lettuce. And then the last one is just spices or any, you know, flavoring that you like, ginger, garlic, that kind of thing. So that's the formula.
That's genius. That's genius. I love it. I'm thinking I would use steamed zucchini because I find it to be sweeter than raw zucchini.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. I just like the raw one when I want it to be flavorless, but I want the volume. So then, mm-hmm. you know, I can just put a tiny amount of nuts and seeds and then the raw zucchini, and you can even peel it. Like if you want to make cashew cheese or something that you want to have white, then you can just peel it, and then it'll be a white, much lower fat sauce.
Wow, that's awesome, and it has lots of fiber.
Yes, definitely, and you just blend it all together, which I forgot to mention, but you throw all these things in the blender, and it takes 5 to 10 minutes, and it's done, and then your meals are so much more flavorful.
I like that. I tend to blend water with nuts or seeds and a little citrus. That's like the fast. But mm-hmm. I like the idea of adding zucchini. That's I'm excited about that. I got to try it.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you for that.
Sure. I hope everybody tries it at home and get creative. You know, I like to use whatever I kind of have on hand and just play around with it. It's a lot of fun.
All right, now you have an online course that's coming out in March.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us.
So in the course, I'm teaching this method in much more detail, and then also giving 52 recipes for salad dressings, dips, and sauces that people can make that are tested, and also meal ideas. So how I like to make my meals is that I'll make a sauce that'll last for 2-3 days, and then use it for my main meal a few times in different ways. So it really, really saves time once it's already ready. So I'm giving people 3 weeks worth of those main meals and also teaching them how to soak and sprout nuts and seeds and beans. That really, really helps digestion and, just a way to really get better digestion and still have really flavorful food because we don't want to lose that aspect of it.
No, and when you eat this way and your palate gets cleaner, it's even more mm-hmm. flavorful than you could ever imagine because your taste buds become clean.
Exactly.
Yes, I like to say you don't know how good you can feel and you don't know how great this food can taste.
Yeah, I love that. But to be honest with you, I've also fed my omnivore friends and my super picky friends. I have all sorts, you know, and they've all loved it. So they all like to come over for this kind of food. But you're right. I guess when you start eating cleaner foods that way, you're definitely tasting even more of all the flavors.
You know what else? I think so many people are lost in the kitchen and don't really know how to prepare food or prepare good tasting food, that when they're invited to eat some food that's been prepared for them, even when it's vegan and raw, it's delicious because they're just not used to fresh good food.
That's so true. Yeah, they're used to a lot of processed food.
Yep, bringing it home.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about my kitchen is that there is no processed food, so it's a lot more fun and easier to avoid when you don't have it in your house.
What does your kitchen look like?
Oh, I wish I could do video. I have a ton of spices. That's kind of my key thing. Everybody laughs when they see my spice drawer. I have a nice pantry. It has a lot of different of these things, you know, of all this kind of things that give flavor to food. And of course, fruits and vegetables. So most of my kitchen is fruits and vegetables, and there are beans and quinoa and amaranth and millet and all that good stuff in the fridge or freezer, because that's where we should keep them. They oxidize easily, not outside.
Oh. Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Can't repeat that enough. People are surprised to hear that too.
Yeah. And your nuts and seeds, all that stuff, put them in the fridge or freezer.
Yep, gotta do that. Okay, what else do you want to mention about you and Soul in the Raw that we haven't touched upon?
Soul in the Raw. I would just really want to invite people to, even if you don't buy the course, to come and join the community that's on Facebook, on Raw Souls, and just ask your questions and, you know, get supported. And it is definitely a journey with digestion and with all this kind of food. It's kind of a long journey, because when I started with raw food, I had this impression that magically everything was going to get better. Everybody talks about it online, that you start eating this way and then within a month or a week, you know, miracles will happen. And that did not happen to me at all. It took a really long time, and I kept being so surprised, you know, and also looking at my mom, I was surprised. But It took me at least 4 years to really feel a big difference in my digestion. In the beginning, I would still, like, even when I was eating raw and really good food, I would have these pains that I thought were a heart attack. I'm not even exaggerating, because of the digestive issues that I was having. And so I think trauma has a lot to do with it for me. And healing my body through that was a big deal. And food helps trauma, and trauma doesn't help food sometimes. They get in the way of each other at times. But it was a long journey, and it took time. And, you know, I think people, we all think that it's just going to take a month or something. And maybe that's why a lot of people give up on veganism. They think it doesn't work because it takes time. But I think my message is to just be really, really patient with yourself and with the food, and believe in it, because there's no other amazing diet out there that is so backed by research and stories of people healing things. So just give it time and be patient. And whatever, you know, we spent I don't know how many years being sick, and then we can't expect that within a week we're going to get better right away. So it takes time, but it's so worth it. It's so worth it.
I appreciate you saying that. We're all different. We're all unique. We all have a unique history. We all have a unique makeup, and we respond differently. So it takes some people more quickly to heal and recover, and takes other people longer. I know for myself, I'm a long-term vegetarian and vegan, and after being vegan for, like, 20 years or so, I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer, and I went through chemotherapy.
Wow.
It took a year for the side effects of chemotherapy to leave my body, and that was with lots of green juicing and lots of detoxing green foods, and it takes time, but it works. Be patient.
It and, you know, I think it's so interesting. I mean, it's important that you brought up that you were sick after being vegan, because another belief that I also had, but I've rethought that, is that if you're vegan, you'll never get sick, and, you know, it's like a panacea for everything, and you'll have perfect health. And there's a lot of pressure out there for vegans to always look perfect, feel perfect, and people look at us and they say, oh, you have a cold, you need to go back to eating meat. And that's just not true, because health is so much more than just food. I mean, food is a huge part of it, but there's so many more aspects to it. So I think we need to kind of take the pressure off a little bit and know that we can get sick, but we can always go back to health through the food, through the breathing and the good mood and meditation and all of those important things.
I agree. Thank you so much for summing that up so beautifully, Marita. And I really appreciate you appearing in my life recently and wanting to come on this program. You saved the day for me, and it was a pleasure talking to you. So I wish you a lot with Soul, a lot of good luck with Soul in the Raw. Thanks for joining
me
on It's All About Food.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, be well. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Marina Yanae Trainer. I didn't ask how she pronounced her name. T-R-I-N-E-R of Soul in the Raw. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Tony Hendra.
And Jeff Chrysler.
Of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
On PRN.
Your source for organic,
gluten-free,
sustainable
satire.
Hello, everyone. I'm Bhavani Jaroff, natural food chef and owner of IE Green, a company dedicated to connecting the dots between the foods we eat, how they are grown, how they impact our environment, and how they affect our health. We celebrate the pleasures around the table and work to build a sustainable food movement of like-minded people. I'd like to invite you to join my show, IE Green with Bhavani, every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I share my recipe of the week, discuss food and environmental policies that affect us all, and interview a leader in the fields of food, health, or the environment. Together, we can work to build a sustainable food movement, one bite at a time. Remember, my show is every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I hope you can join us.
Carrie Harrison with you, inviting you to join me on The Smart Show every Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're not able to catch me live, you can go to the archives at prn.fm or harrison.fm. Don't forget, it's impeccable behavior to rate the show on iTunes. We come to you each Monday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live from Hollywood, where we bring on the movers and shakers, whistleblowers and muckrakers. There's nothing like it anywhere else, and it's here on PRN.FM. If you like a smart show, then join me, Carrie Harrison. It's Harrison on the Progressive Radio Network. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Hey, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and here we are with It's All About Food. And just have 15 or 20 minutes left, and I have a lot to talk about. The first thing, thank you for joining me and tuning in, love. It's such an important time for us to do this together, breathing together, talking to people, looking in their eyes, and engaging with everyone around us on a very civil level so that we can make positive change. And I'm sending out light, to heal over the darkness. And I'm hoping, since this is audio, that perhaps you might see some of that light. You know, some people can actually see colors when they hear certain sounds. And so I'm thinking maybe you can see the light I am sending you over the audio waves. Get your pens. I want to make a request to you. I hope you've been calling and writing your government officials on local, state, and federal levels. We need to engage as much as we can right now. And I just spoke with someone at the USDA, someone by the name of Andrea. The phone number is 1-844-820-2234. Again, 1-844-820-2234. I was voicing my concern about the deletion of content from the USDA's website on animal welfare violations and the animal exploitation industries. There's been a lot of websites that have been going away from the White House and a number of federal institutions. And some say it's because with every new administration, they like to redesign and revamp. But I have a feeling some of these are more treacherous, where they're actually getting rid of information to remove the transparency that we have with a lot of these organizations. And what's interesting in particular about this one is that the Humane Society, they had a lawsuit against the USDA in 2005 over public access to Animal Welfare Act reports concerning animal use in university and other laboratories. And it helps to have this information on a website where people can learn about animal welfare violations and industries that are doing more exploitation, so that you can make informed decisions when you're involved, might want to be involved with some of these industries. And there was a settlement in 2009 where the USDA agreed to post certain data on their website concerning research on animals, and that's all been taken down. And the Animal Welfare Act and Horse Protection Act enforcement documentation has been removed and appears to violate in plain terms the settlement of this federal court order. So I called Andrea at 1-844-820-2234. I spoke with her this morning. She was courteous, but honestly, she sounded uncomfortable with the language she was given to respond to calls like mine. And she told me slowly and while she stuttered that they're striving to achieve balance, that the issue is in litigation right now, and they're just trying to decide what to do, but they want to support privacy concerns, and I wonder who's concerned about privacy here. Clearly, it must be the animal industries that are known for exploiting and violating the laws that we do have for animal welfare. And I was really disturbed about this, and so I encourage you to call. They're taking notice of the people that are calling, and hopefully this is one way that they can hear our voice and make the right decisions. Another thing I wanted to bring up because it was kind of fun. There's a program on PBS called The Hidden Killers, and it's a bit of history about what happened in the Victorian era and how early adopters of new products were unintentional guinea pigs, and I found it fascinating and somewhat relevant, too. So a part of the show talks about how when different products came out, like baking soda or rat poison, a variety of different white powders that were just packaged in plain boxes, people would make mistakes and use a poisonous product instead of a safe product. And there were all kinds of unfortunate consequences as a result, including death. And that led to labeling. And we talk about labeling all the time and how inadequate the labeling on our food today is. But it's far better than it used to be. And that's why it's important to stay vigilant. That's why it's important to demand positive change. Because change does happen, and we want to continue moving in a positive direction. The problem today with our new United States federal government administration is they seem to be backtracking a bit on all of the progress that we've made. And some people have commented to me about things that go on at our nonprofit website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, about how in my What Vegans Eat blog, for example, I should just be talking about healthy, delicious food and not mixing in my opinions about what is going on today with government. And I think it's impossible to separate our food system with politics because our food system is politics. For those of you who are aware of all the issues around poverty and food insecurity, it's not because there's not enough food on the planet. It's because the distribution of food is unjust. And this is political. And then even here in the United States, we have neighborhoods that have difficult access to healthy foods. There are more junk food restaurants and convenience stores rather than groceries where they can get relatively priced healthy foods. A lot of this is political, and we need to speak out. We need to get loud. We need to voice our concerns. No more sitting down and being complacent. We all need to chat about this. And unfortunately, we have lots of regulations currently for foods and drugs, other products, and it looks like the new administration is wanting to remove more and more regulations that have been protecting us to date. We need more protections, I think, because there are a lot of things that are still imperfect about our food system. And unfortunately, by just listening to this PBS program as an example, or I remember interviewing a number of people on this program. Do you remember the story about white bread on this program and hearing about the history behind white bread? Unfortunately, when people are manufacturing food products, whether they have good intentions in the beginning or not, some may be influenced by profit. No, you can't believe that, right? Some may be influenced by wanting to make more profit, and finding ways to do that could mean using low-quality ingredients as fillers. And over history, some of those low-quality ingredients were detrimental to health and toxic. And we've even seen it today, I think, coming from other countries. I'm not aware off the top of my head, but I absolutely could be wrong, where we have been deceived in terms of the ingredients that have been in products that have actually been poisonous. And then, yeah, sure, there are chemicals that are put into artificial ingredients that are put into products today that may be approved that aren't really good for us, and we're learning about those and trying to get them removed from products. So that we've got a lot of work to do, and regulation is important for that because, as I said, unfortunately, people sometimes do whatever they can to maximize product and that profit, and that does not mean that they will keep the product healthy for us unless they have to by law. Okay, a few months ago, I told you about the Two Forks events. This is Forks Over Knives and Engine 2, and they come together and they put on events. This is the Forks Over Knives people, which is the storytellers of Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. T. Colin Campbell. And Engine 2, which is Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn's son, Rip Esselstyn. And they come together and they have speakers and all kinds of wonderful things. Well, there were three of them this year. Two of them have already gone by, and I know some of you have attended those, but there's one more, and it's in Pasadena, March 24th to the 26th. So if you have a chance and you have some time, March 24th to March 26th, it's a premier two-day experience. It'll help you kick off or re-embrace a plant-strong lifestyle with lots of great food and knowledge and inspiration. And if you use the weekend pass code REAL50, you get $50 off. REAL50! So you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and a link to it. It's in our top slider. Or go directly to twoforksevents.com and use the REAL50 code. That's good for $50. Okay. Last thing I want to leave you with. I like to end with deliciousness because I think that's the most inspiring and the most fun. So as you may know, we're in California for 9 weeks directing a production of Fiddler on the Roof. And it's fun and it's challenging because we're not at home with all of our kitchen tools and supplies and a pantry stocked with the things that we like to have. We're in a small pool house and grateful to be here, and it's wonderful. But it offers challenges. So yesterday, I created a little recipe, which I hope to post very soon, but I was quite pleased the way it turned out, and I wanted to tell you about it. So it was a tofu scramble, and I used sprouted tofu, which It's pretty easy to find, and you can use regular firm tofu as well, and I just mashed it very simply. I sautéed a chopped red onion, and we talked about oil before. I didn't use any oil. This was a dry sauté in a frying pan, and as it started to stick to the pan, I would add a little water. And then the onions got nice and limp and transparent and lovely. Now, I'm a person who doesn't like to waste. And when we've been making a kale salad, I usually remove the stems. And when we're at home and I do make juices, I use the stems in the juice. Well, we haven't really been juicing here much, although we do have access to a juicer. I decided I would take the stems and chop them up really finely because I didn't have something to give my dish a little crunch. Like normally I might put celery in it or maybe some carrots, and I didn't have them. So I chopped up the stems and cooked them with the onions. And then when that was all done, I added the mashed tofu. Now I wanted it to have some nice flavoring. And again, limited with ingredients, what did I have? I had Dijon mustard, soy milk, and nutritional yeast. Here you go. I took about 2 tablespoons of mustard, maybe about 1/4 cup of the soy milk, and a couple of tablespoons or more of the nutritional yeast, and beated it together with a fork and made a creamy sauce that I poured over the scramble. Et voila. It was a very, very lovely, light flavor. So I'm going to leave you imagining that deliciousness. And thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartcliffe, and have a delicious week, everybody.